We have many priorities, mm-hmm. and we have many things that are important to us. Again, go back to what I said earlier, that head, heart, and briefcase. Mm-hmm. There's all those components with right. us at all time.
Yeah.
And family is important, and community is important, and work is important. And I think at the end of the day, so many of us are trying to figure out, how do I balance everything?
That's right.
That's important, because so many times we want it all at once, and it's hard to achieve that.
Something that stuck out from that so much to me was this idea of splitters and
blenders,
splitters and blenders, and most importantly, how when somebody's forced to do one or the other, yeah. they feel very unsatisfied mm-hmm. with work. I think that this is so important. I try to talk to like three or four different people about yes. this, and you're like the premier authority on this data. So yeah. you've got to tell us the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Grace, thank you so much for coming on the Pressure Tested podcast. We're so excited to have you here.
I'm glad to be with you. I know we've talked about this for a little while and we're making it happen.
That's right. So my first impression of you is just still so strong in my brain, and that doesn't always happen for me with people. And so I just remember you, and yeah, I think you had a red dress on that day. And you came up to me and you were so warm and you introduced yourself, you learned my name. And then right after that, you were up giving the talk. It was International Women's Day. Yes. And you immediately started saying people's name mm-hmm. in the crowd. Mm-hmm. And it felt so genuine. And I really questioned, I was like, okay, does she know everyone in the room except me? Mm-hmm. And my name is the only name she just had to learn. Mm-hmm. But because of that, it drew me in so much to what you were talking about that day. You know, obviously the subject content was really great, but the way you delivered it, I thought was so impactful. Mm-hmm. And so I immediately said to myself, I got to meet her. I got to actually spend some time with her. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of led me to start talking to you. I want to like dig right into, because I think you have such an interesting career transition. Mm-hmm. Just tell me the whole thing. What'd yeah. you major in? How'd it happen?
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you for the really kind comment about that. You know, so many times, I don't know if you experience this as a leader, but we can think about and focus on all the areas where we want to grow and still develop. And I think that's important, but it's so affirming when you think about things that you have worked on and then you see that other people are noticing them. Mm-hmm. So before I answer that question, I want you to know, no, I did not know many people in the room the day
wow.
you came. And so I was trying to be intentional to know who was in the room, honestly, to calm my own nerves mm. and to feel more connected to all of you.
That's
so
great.
Yeah, so anyway, there's
that. I love
that. Okay, yeah. My transition to how I got to where I mm-hmm. am is really different. So I start off by saying I'm a first-generation college graduate. And I think that's an important part of my story because I'm a firm believer that we can be what we can see. And so for me, I saw my grandmother. She was a bookkeeper, and she did taxes, and she was very successful at that. And my mom was a young mother, so while my mom was at work, I was with my grandmother at work, and that meant in her home business, which was bookkeeping. And so I saw bookkeeping and accounting as the first profession, really. Okay. And one thing led to another, and I had an opportunity to take an accounting class in high school, and I was pretty good at it. And so that's just what I decided I wanted to do when I went to college. So I went to Baylor University, studied business and accounting, and took an accounting job at a prestigious big-name accounting firm, was there for 15 years. And there may be more of that story we want to get into later, but I jokingly refer to myself now as a recovering CPA. So it was a big part of who I was. It was a great piece of formation, and it's helped me into what I'm doing today.
And what is it that you're doing today? Tell me all about Rethink Results.
Yeah, so Rethink Results, I thought it was going to be an executive coaching business. And the reason I say I thought that is because that's where it began. That's where it started. I did all of my coaching credentialing with the Neuro Leadership Institute, and I began that work. And it was really great work. I loved it. I was really good at it. I don't know how good I was at accounting and the work I was doing for many years, but I was finally good at something, and it felt great. And one thing started leading to another. As I was coaching executives, all of a sudden they started asking, well, what would it look like if you worked with my team? well, what would it look like if you came inside my organization and did some work? And so today, the work we do within Rethink Results, we still do executive coaching work, but I do a lot of training and development work and leadership team work as well.
Okay, you have a mission statement, helping workplaces work for everyone. Yeah. What does that actually mean?
Yeah, you know, years ago, I came across this number, and it was 90,000. 90,000 is the average number of hours Americans spend over a lifetime at work. And the big eyes and the sigh that you just kind of have, we all have that when
wow.
we see that.
Oh, my goodness.
It's a lot of hours. And for so many of us, it's not a great number of hours many times. You know, work can be hard, and it's called work for a reason. Mm-hmm. I get that. It's not leisure. But I just knew that there was an opportunity for work to be better. And when I think about the workplace working for all, I think about what would it mean and look like if employees were really engaged and thriving at work? What could that mean for their workplaces, their home places, and our communities? I'm very results focused. That's okay. The businesswoman in me. I know businesses, most of them are there to be for profit, right?
Right.
To create certain outcomes that lead to a measure, a financial
That's right.
measure, right? That's what we're here to do. And I also know that most employees need to work to earn that paycheck. And at the same time, I know that only 1/3 of the American workforce is highly engaged. And when I take a look at that whole story, Kelly, I mean, that's kind of my numerical reasoning aptitude. Never say a story to me, right?
Yeah.
And I look at that story and I say, I know it can be better for everyone. And so that was really the genesis for where all that began. What would working better look like for employees? And how could it also be good for employers?
Okay, so take me through, and you don't have to name names of who you consult with, but just kind of take me through the initial process of what you do. If a company hires you and you're really kind of setting out to make the workforce more engaged, it sounds like, what are the measures that you do? How do you go about doing that?
Yeah, you know, the first thing I will say is measuring people metrics is difficult because many times those metrics are qualitative, right? But I will say there are many organizations that I could call out, but I will call out the Gallup organization. Gallup has been studying the workplace and then the people factors or metrics for decades. I think that Gallup does a phenomenal job of giving us very accessible tools on how we can measure employee engagement.
Okay.
And so Gallup has boiled it down to there are 12 core needs that employees have at work. And when those needs are met, business metrics get better. There are 9 or 10 business metrics
really?
That get
I've never
better.
Heard of this. Okay.
Yeah. And what's so beautiful about it is the survey is not overly convoluted. It's a 12, I think they've added an additional question. It's a 13-question survey. It would take you and I probably less than 5 minutes to take the survey. That those results are normed against Gallup's database.
Wow.
And it's there that I get to, and it's all anonymous.
Okay.
So then I get to show those reports. Like if I did this for your team or if I did this for your company, we'd be able to cut it by manager or by how long people had been here. We have lots of different options. But then I can sit down with the managers to say, this is the heartbeat of your people. We look at these 12 core needs, and I say, this is what's measuring. Now, I'll be honest, Kelly, a lot of times the first need is, or the first survey statement is, I clearly know what's expected of me at work. This one averages less than 50% of employees can strongly agree to that. Now, here's where the gap is. The leader will say, but they do know what's expected of them. And I will say, sorry, wrong answer. They're saying they don't. And then we have to bridge the gap because it's not about tightening up the job description. It's about so much more than that. And that's what we start digging into.
Well, it's funny because you say that and I was like, oh, they don't have a good job description. They don't have clear KPIs.
Exactly.
So like I immediately just kind of take a manager approach to it.
Yeah.
But you're right. It probably means so much more about communication. Uh-huh. And that's really interesting.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that survey.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Okay.
Yeah.
So the other Gallup product that I think it's Gallup. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. Probably speaking out of turn. Is StrengthsFinder, right?
It is.
Okay,
yeah, it's
good.
Gallup, you got it.
I love StrengthsFinder. I think it's so great.
great.
Yes.
So I just want to hear, so this is something I've done StrengthsFinder with you.
Yes.
And so I just want you to tell me a little bit about it.
Yeah. So I love telling how I was introduced to Gallup StrengthsFinder tool. So I had a colleague of mine years ago. We were in the same organization together, and we're both pretty focused on like self-development, leadership development. Well, Mary had heard about Gallup StrengthsFinder tool. Gosh, this was probably about 12 years ago. Back then, you bought the book and the assessment code was in the back of mm-hmm. the book. You opened it up and you went online to take it. Okay. So Mary had done that. She was all lit up about it. She bought me a book and brought it to me the next time we were together. And I thought it sounded wonderful and great. And honestly, Kelly, I took the book home and I set it on my shelf and I just got busy with life.
Yeah.
Well, this person, her name's Mary. Mary's that kind of friend that she was staying on it, though. Like, she would ask me about it and ask me about it. It was going to be like the third time I was going to see her after it. And I thought, it's rude at this point. Yeah. Lord and Grace, go take the assessment. And I took it. And for me, Kelly, I read about my top five strengths, which are harmony, maximizer, relator, woo, and positivity.
Wow.
And I read about those and I thought, yeah, I think this is true, but I don't know how this translates to a strength. And I don't know if or how I'm using these intentionally to make a difference in my work. And that was really the opening spot for me.
Okay. So once you learned them, how long between you learning them did you kind of have a shift in your brain about, am I employing these strengths every single day?
Yeah. You know, I would say, well, this goes back to another one of my talents. It's called, it's Activator. It's just mm-hmm. outside of my top five. So when I see something of value and I connect with it, I activate on it pretty quickly because that's just who I am.
That's great.
And what that means is in all of my executive coaching work that I was doing at the time, this started finding its way into that work just organically. Maybe I was sharing an anecdotal story with a client. Well, then they said, well, if this is making a difference for you, then let me take the assessment. Maybe you can help me with my results. So I find that having another friend, having taken it also, so my friend Mary and I think one activating factor was that helped me because we were in conversation about it. Then I just started being more aware in my surroundings. I call it spotting strengths. I just started noticing I'm using these strengths where I could be using these strengths in various ways. And then I think the third thing was I started infusing it in how I might be able to help others and go deeper, faster with our work. And I feel like it was that trilogy of factors that led me to saying, hey, I want to get some more training. So I did all my training with Gallup. I went through their strengths coaching certification program there. And the rest is history.
I mean, every strength that you listed is so perfectly aligned with what you do today.
Yeah.
That's just amazing. Like, I don't know that people always see that.
Yeah.
What, you know, they look at what they do every day and they're like, does this even really align?
Yeah.
A strength that you mentioned, and it's so funny. This is just something my brain's been coming around to lately. I think it's great that one of your top strengths is positivity.
Yeah.
I think that, so our HR director, one of her top strengths is also positivity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like if I would have read that a year ago, I would have been like, oh, that's a waste of a strength. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sorry to say that that's exactly what I would have said about it.
Yep.
But I got introduced to this book over the summer, The Power of Positivity. Mm-hmm. It's like this really old book. Yes. And somebody just like, I was at this dinner and somebody said, you ought to read this book. And I thought, okay, this is a super successful woman. Maybe I should read this book. Yes. And so I picked it up and the first few chapters of that book, I will tell you, has like changed my life. Mm-hmm. It's changed how I think about things. I can immediately spot when I'm just being negative about something. Mm-hmm. So it's like, this is something that like I wish I naturally had.
Yeah.
Like people who have this, blessed. Mm. Because that is not a normal, that's not an easy thing for everyone to just immediately be positive about something.
Yeah. And you know, Kelly, you bring up a good point. So, you know, research shows that we each have almost what they refer to as a set point with our positivity. And that set point, we might not be able to shift and change, but there is a lot we can shift and change in what we do with whatever our set point is. And so what that could mean is, so what? I have maybe a slightly higher set point than you or someone else with positivity, right? But there are things that we each can do to level up on our positivity, right? Maybe I'm naturally going to see things in a different way than you do. And I do think that that is a strength that I can leverage that I didn't see for many years. But I think for each of us as leaders to know, we know one aspect of followership, by the way, one of the aspects Gallup found is hope. And hope relates to being able to see a brighter future and to be able to bring others along with you to that future. And so I link that back to positivity. And I think to that book that you read, right? Whatever your set point is, you're doing something with wherever you are. And that's what's critical.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right about that. Somebody who's really, another person that's actually really good at positivity and kind of just always glass half full is Garrett Moss. And he will... He, you know, regardless of kind of what you hit him with, you know, because I've been through it with, you know, throughout the business over the years, he's always been able to see the positive part, and it's allowed people to really follow him because they know that he, you know, because if he feels confident and he can be positive about it, then we can all just kind of get in line. So I definitely see that. That's great. This is like the one podcast, and I'm like, I wish I had a notebook so I could write down what she's saying.
Well, I'm learning from you also, and I've heard about this book, The Power of Positivity, and I do believe it's a book I've heard about for years, but I've not read it either, so I think I want to look into that.
I want to say it's from the early 90s.
Maybe so.
And it's very biblical. Okay. Relates all back to different passages in the Bible, which I think is really good. I think I forget if he is a pastor.
Okay.
But I thought the book was great.
Yeah. I was going to say, I have to look at that.
Okay. So you're in your new company, Rethink Results, and you're going along and you're helping people. What do you think your moment of just kind of your aha moment of saying, wow, look at what I've been able to accomplish. This is exactly why I do this. What has that been for you?
Yeah. There are two things that come to my mind. One was a very specific client example. And I think the other is something that I just keep seeing reiterated. So I'll start with the client example. When I decided to move away from the large public accounting firm I was a part of and start this new venture, I, like I told you earlier, I did my executive coaching work with Neuro Leadership Institute. So there's a certification process. I went through all of that. And then I started having my own, you know, building my own client base. And with true coaching, it's not consulting. It's coaching. And coaching is about, one of the things it's about is asking questions that help a person unlock what their answers are. I really believe in the agency that we each have within us. And so many times we say we are looking for an answer or a solution and we need that input from others. I think sometimes that answer is right. Sometimes we do need some new data or information from others. But a lot of times I find that people have more answers within them than they realize. But they just may have to dig to find them. And I think that's where a good coach comes in. And so I remember in my neuroleadership training, them talking to us about not feeding people answers, not giving the suggestions, but really trying to hold steady in the process of questioning. And I remember like it was yesterday, Kelly, this was one of my early clients. I remember we were in it like a series of questions. We were talking about something she was working through, and she had an aha moment in the coaching session. And she said, I think I got it. I know what I need to do. And I remember what she said after that. I thought, I never would have come up with that solution for her. And it was one of those moments where I thought, there's so much beauty in this profession that I'm now having the opportunity to call mine and to partner with people in a way that I never had before.
That's amazing.
Right? So I remember that. That made me think, this is why I'm doing this. This makes a difference. And then the other piece of it relates to, I get to do a lot of individual leadership work. I get to do work with people's leadership teams. But then I also get to do work inside organizations where they may send me 20 leaders, and those leaders are in one cohort for an entire year. So I'm thinking back to a corporate client that I've done that work for several years.
Okay.
And I am... 10 months into this last cohort I've had, we will graduate them in December. And the other that makes it, you know, that feeling of, oh, this is worth it. This is why I do this. from beginning of the cohort till 10 months in it, seeing the growth and the possibilities and the development of people. I'm thinking about one conversation I had with a woman. She is already seen and identified by others as a leader inside her organization. People can see further into her future than she can. And she confided in me. This was at our last coaching session. She said, you know, Laurie Grace, I think at the beginning of this cohort, I was honored to be nominated to be in this, and I was going to do it wholeheartedly, but I really didn't know if I was interested in the long-term journey of leadership and people management. But she said, I decided to go through this cohort anyway because it was a great opportunity. And she said, over the last couple of months, as I've learned more about my aptitudes, my strengths, and my drives, by the way, those are three distinct data sets, she said, I think I'm realizing what my version of leadership would be, and I think I'm ready to say yes.
Wow.
And right, for me, Kelly, I thought that was about us helping that woman see and know what her unique attributes were so we could help her identify what her path forward could be. And for me, to see people fully move into their potential and connect that with performance, that makes the job worth it.
Wow. That's really cool. Yeah. That's really cool. I can't even imagine that, because I think that I know people like that who can't imagine themselves as leading an organization or even wanting to get into the messy drama that is people managing. And it's amazing that you can kind of show people, not necessarily, I don't want to say value, I think that's the a poor choice of words, but just kind of show people what they're capable of with some of these assessments and really get them on the right path. Like you've changed that person's whole life, their whole career trajectory. That's amazing.
Well, it is. And what I'd love to say is it's always been in her. It's always been in you. It's always been in me.
I like that. I like that you push it back on the individual.
Yeah. There are, you know, three elements that I think of that are important. And I've learned that I'm masterful in connecting the dots between. And it's people, potential, and performance.
Wow.
And I think that links us back to one of the, you know, the questions we talked about earlier is workplaces working for everyone. I mean, at the end of the day, it's almost as if I start with performance and what's possible, and we reverse engineer from there. But it all starts with who the person is. And when we can start unpacking that and helping the person see what distinguishes them, what their uniques are, and then they can really launch from there, it changes everything.
Okay, so you go StrengthsFinder, and then you go Predictive Index.
Yeah.
So tell me, okay, so we were having a big debate recently that I just kind of succumbed to. I just said, okay, we'll just pick one and go. Yep. But we were debating Predictive Index over Culture Index.
Yeah.
And I said Predictive Index only because I had done Predictive Index with you.
Sure.
And I'm always so in awe of Predictive Index. Like, tell, for anybody who doesn't know what it is, like, just explain Predictive Index.
Yeah. So Predictive Index has been around for about 65 years now. And what they measure is a person's drives. They measure four core drives. And based upon the measure of your drives, by the way, there's no good measure or bad measure. There's just different measures. Based on what those four drives measure, it can tell us a lot about what people are going to need and how they're going to behave and how they're going to act. And as leaders, if we have the measurement of their drives, we can predict behavior and hopefully we can meet needs early.
Okay.
Right? And so that can be a real difference maker. But when we think about how a team comes together, we know that just as individuals through their drives have strengths and caution areas, teams collectively, I love it when I get to work with a team through Predictive Index because we get to create a team profile and everyone gets to see what are the collective strengths of the team and the cautions of the team so we can approach our strategies differently. So again, it's data, it's science that helps us understand more about the individual, and data is only good if we do something with it and it informs better decisions. And I think PI does a good job of helping us do that.
So PI versus Culture Index.
Yeah, you know, I will tell you, I've been exposed to both of them. The science is very similar.
Okay.
I believe the story may be that early on there were some similar people and then two companies broke off, right? It's a common story. I know just more about Predictive Index. I'm a certified partner with them.
Okay.
And so I'll tell you from a software standpoint what they have poured into that company in the last 5 years has made their software phenomenal. Mm. What you can do in there, the reports you can create, relational guides. Like, Kelly, we could put you in Predictive Index with me, and it creates a report to tell us what might be easy about our working Ooh. Together, what might be hard about our working together, and where our partnership could be good. So things like that. I love that. Right? It's just simple and actionable.
Okay. So with Predictive Index, let's say that you have, let's just say you're running, you know, you're an entrepreneur, you're running a company, and you get everybody in the company to take Predictive Index. Mm-hmm. What's kind of your next step? Yeah. Like, are you more worried about Predictive Index and how people relate to each other? Or are you more worried with lining up people that have certain drives with roles that they'll be successful in?
Yeah. So the answer is yes or both, right?
Okay.
Yeah. So I will tell you, I think initially, and this was years ago when I thought about Culture Index and Predictive Index, I thought about it more as a tool for hiring. Okay. And it is. It's a great tool for hiring if it's understood and if it's used well. I believe that Predictive Index and the measurement of drives, it is one big piece of the measure of the hiring process. It's not everything. People come to work with head and heart and briefcase. Okay. And we need to hire a whole person.
Yeah. Okay. I've heard that before.
Right? Yeah. Like you that. Think
I'm
about those
putting
three
that
parts.
In my brain.
Yeah. Yeah. And so hiring, yes, it's wonderful and great. But I will tell you, one of my largest Predictive Index clients, do you know, they don't really use it for hiring. They use it more so once they get people in the door, they feel like they enjoy and they like what their hiring process is. It is producing good hires. And so they're using it more so to help individuals understand self better. So mm-hmm. when we think about self-leadership and management, and then they're also using it as a tool for the person's manager. So that person can begin to understand, the manager can understand the person better, and then perhaps give better coaching and development.
So it kind of scares the hell out of me when people say that they use it for hiring yeah. because I have such a crazy like Predictive Index profile. Have yes. you seen mine?
Is yours really wide?
Yes.
Do I remember that?
So
yeah,
it's the venture profile.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And so we just hired a new CTO, and he had done Predictive Index before, and he's like, oh, you've done it? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, let me see yours. And I was like, okay, you know, like that makes me a little nervous, but yes, I will show you.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, and he just kind of ohs a few times. I'm mm-hmm. like, what the heck does that
yeah.
mean? What does that mean? And then, so he kind of has a couple of things. He's like, well, based on how far this is over here, it means that you're more driving than 95% of other people. And I was like, yikes. And you know, like I'm very independent in my thinking. Uh-huh. And so sometimes it's very hard for me to listen to others when it
sure.
comes to work. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I have a boss just mm-hmm. like everybody else on the planet. Like mm-hmm. I have somebody that I report to.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I've taken that,
yeah.
Every time I have an interaction where I just think I'm the only right mm-hmm. answer, and you know, he kind of pushes me to see a different perspective, I've learned to just like, okay, and walk away from it and be like, okay, this is you driving to just not, yeah. to be so independent.
Yes.
So I think just taking the assessment mm-hmm. helped me so much.
Yes.
Just kind of to see my own, like how, I, you know, and like when I read it, I was like, so it takes 5 minutes.
That's right.
It takes 5 minutes.
Very fast.
When I first went to take it, I was like, what is answering like 3 or 4 questions and just finding words? What is this going to tell me about my personality? Mm-hmm. Like I was immediately skeptical. I was like, this is a waste of my time. So I take it and I'm like, oh my gosh,
yeah. uh-huh.
this is wild. Like uh-huh. this is exactly who I am. Mm-hmm. And it's funny. So the other thing he said was, he goes, oh, I'm really surprised you were a CFO because I'm very like flexible versus mm-hmm. like deep. And I'm like, yeah, I know. That's why I'm not a CFO anymore. That's why I'm moving to a different career mm-hmm. path. It's like, it's just crazy what it unlocks for you
yeah.
and your brain.
Well, and I think you tap on something really important, you know. It is. It's 5 minutes. You're thinking,
5 minutes.
What is it? I mean,
yeah.
what can this tell me?
Right.
And then for most people, they read it and they say, okay, it's pretty spot on. And I love it when I will then give a report to someone that's like their peers report, their peers Predictive Index, and I'll have them read it and I'll say, okay, does this describe this person? They're like, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, but here's now my question. It took me 5 minutes to read this and know this about your peer, how many years did it take you to figure all
That's
this
right.
out about them? So I think in business, it's also about speed, right? How quickly can I understand, learn, and know someone and have accurate data? And maybe then I can start interacting with them in a way that is better. But to your point about, yes, about others, but also about self, just knowing it about ourselves, right? Like knowing where our drives are. You talked about that one drive, we call it the A drive. It tells us whether we're more collaborative or independent. So understanding and knowing where and how you're prone and wired to be can help you to own it, hopefully to make a positive story about it. And at the same time, I think there's this job of like self-management or self-regulation, mm-hmm. right? To know where the strength is coming. But hey, what's the caution I just need to watch out for? Like in that, you and I share a high A drive, right? Mostly independent. So with people and leaders I'm working with, I might say, hey, pause just a beat and say, is there one person, one question, one email, one source I could reach out to about this, right? Where's there an opportunity to collaborate slightly more than I have to this point?
Okay.
But if I'm talking to a leader that is low A, that is highly, highly collaborative, mm-hmm. they build census all along the way,
yes,
involve others.
Yes.
That leadership style can be just as strong, but it looks really different.
It does.
So the stretch I would say for them is, where could you say, I've collaborated enough? I've gotten enough feedback or mm-hmm. opinion. Where can I just move forward now independently? Mm. It's a different conversation.
That's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I can't wait to see the executive teams.
Yes.
Like, I just cannot wait to read about it. Like, mm-hmm. I'm so nerdy when it comes to, like, how people think and how they – and it's like, I just can't wait. I'm super excited about it. So we are doing Culture Index, but I'm curious. So we actually sent the survey out, like, yesterday.
Okay.
So I'm really curious, like – how it's going to look compared to Predictive Index.
Mm-hmm.
So
you'll have to keep me posted.
I will. I mm-hmm. definitely will. Okay. So one thing that I really wanted to talk to you about today is just, you know, the International Women's Day talk that I heard you give mm-hmm. was really focused on women.
Yeah.
And you've done you have a ton of knowledge about women in the workplace. So just kind of get us up to date. What's the recent report saying about women in the workplace?
Yeah. So I always love that, right? International Women's Day, it's March every year. My favorite sources that are following women in the workplace, McKinsey, Lean In, Forbes, and Gallup. Those are four that I look to a lot. I think they do a great job. When I say a great job, a thorough, very practical job. And so I love getting my hands on the new research every year. I've been following it for about a decade now. So a couple of things. The first I would say is we are making some gains, but many of the same issues that women have struggled with for years, we're still struggling with. And there might be one number, Kelly, that you remember that I showed you all that day, but we are still 50 years out from reaching gender parity, like with men in the workplace.
I do remember that.
Yeah.
That's
50
wild.
Years is a long time.
And explain what that means.
Yeah, so what that means is when we think about women representing 50% of the population and 50% of the at least entry point of workforce, right, like outside of college for many, when we compare all of that to pay levels as well as leadership levels, that's where we're really looking at. And so even though there have been some gains for women, so that's what the research is showing, some of the gains have been that women are holding, more women are holding senior leadership positions. The problem is how we got to the more, though, and how we got there is not sustainable. And so two key reasons. I mean, one has been organic growth, but that's not the biggest piece of it. Two of the biggest pieces are new roles that have been created at senior leadership levels that are more relational or administrative roles. Do you remember this conversation?
I do now.
You're smiling. Yeah. And so the thought is that even though new roles will continue to be created, the speed at which they have been created in recent years, we don't expect that to repeat itself.
Right.
Right. So there's that. And then the other piece of it, so when we take a look at other leadership roles, many of those roles, there are many roles that have been cut, and those have been more operational roles that are held by men.
Okay.
Okay. So if you kind of just start doing the math, if you just by default take out some of those, it looks like women, well, it doesn't look like women are a higher percentage, but it's not because women are are a greater number, it's because the total population decreased.
Got it.
Okay. So we want to acknowledge that there are some gains, but we also want to say in some ways they may be inflated in ways that aren't true. So we want to be mindful of it.
Got it.
So, you know, there is that aspect of it. And then the other aspect that's really close to my heart is just the difference that is perceived and experienced between men and women in this area of executive presence. And I didn't get to talk a lot about that this year.
Okay.
I think I talked about it a little bit a year or two ago in the research briefing. But executive presence, it's what's identified as that it factor, right? And for many reasons, women are behind men as it relates to perceived executive presence.
Okay? Why?
And so, well, it's a couple of reasons. Well, it's various reasons, but I'm going to talk about two of them. Executive presence, there are certain aspects of it, but executive presence is preceded by mature self-confidence and a willingness to be in the room or at the table.
Okay.
And for women, many times, I think about that woman that I told you about that said, I don't know if I want leadership roles. And then 10 months later, she's like, hey, I think I do know this.
Yep.
I think there's that willingness factor.
Wow.
Because for many women, this has been an issue for years. Many times women are holding more of the home administrative burdens and duties with children and home in contrast to men. And this is not a man hate session here. I'm talking to you about data and what the data is showing. So many times that willingness factor for women, they may take a look at what they see as possible in the workplace, and they may either not like or want what they see, or they just don't see that it's possible.
Yeah.
And so because of that, that is in some ways continuing to keep women behind in this executive presence.
Yeah, it makes a ton of sense. I mean, it's the reason that in almost every meeting that I'm in, I'm the only woman there. It's almost rare for there to be another woman in a lot of the rooms that I'm in. And so when there is, I'm always like, here's somebody else for me to kind of talk to and relate to. And, I think that women have a lot of different ideas about what they want in life. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that a lot of women don't want the career. They just don't. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. Like I'm so okay with that. I know a lot of women that stay home and they're happy and they love what they do and they love the time that they get to spend with their kids. And there's different days where I'm very jealous of those women where I'm like, man, you know, because your kids grow up so fast. Like my 10-year-old daughter, she's grown up so fast. Mm-hmm. And I just think back to, you know, all the times that I was working, that, you know, that I was so caught up. And I have to really self-regulate on this all the time, because I'll have a bad day or I'll have a hectic day and I'll go home. And like my tradition is to go home and kind of order DoorDash for the family and immediately go back to work. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I've had to sit back and be like, okay, like I can't just only work. Like I have to be here, I have to be present. Mm-hmm. And I think it's something that women struggle with and kind of rightfully so, right?
Well, sure. I mean, and I think, you know, it goes back to, we have many priorities and we have many things that are important to us. Again, go back to what I said earlier, that head, heart, and briefcase. Mm-hmm. There's all those components with us at all time.
Yeah.
And family is important. Community is important. And work is important. And I think at the end of the day, so many of us are trying to figure out, how do I balance everything?
That's right.
That's important. Because so many times we want it all at once. And it's hard to achieve that.
Something that stuck out from that so much to me was this idea of splitters and
blenders,
splitters and blenders, and most importantly, how when somebody's forced to do one or the other, they feel very unsatisfied with work. I think that this is so important. I try to talk to like 3 or 4 different people about this, and you're the premier authority on this data. So you've got to tell us the whole thing.
Yeah. So the other thing that came out of the research, I believe this was Gallup's sourced information. So we find that in the workplace, many times with women, there are women who prefer to be splitters and there are women who prefer to be blenders. And which did you relate most to? Do you remember, Kelly?
Well, it's funny because we've talked about this afterwards. And so I immediately went blender because I come home, I immediately go back to work. But I think that that's more a reflection of just how much I have to do versus what I prefer to do.
Yes.
I think preferably I'm a splitter, because on Saturday morning,
yeah,
do not email me. Yeah. Like, I'm not going to look at it. Mm-hmm. Like, I will if I have to, mm-hmm. but I need my time back. Yes. So I think I'm a splitter.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So for people listening that haven't heard this concept, right, splitter. Well, you put it in your terms. How did you understand splitter and blender?
So splitter is, there's a time of the day that work has to stop,
yeah.
and you stop thinking about work and you start focusing on something different.
Sure.
And having, you know, the ability to kind of cut that off and start focusing on something different mm-hmm. makes you a splitter. And the blenders can, okay, I'm going to have this conference call while I'm at the basketball game and I'm going to feel totally fine with that.
Yeah.
It's not going to bother me to immediately go home and go back to work.
Yes.
I'm just going to be good with this because I'm going to kind of figure out how to prioritize everything.
Yes. Yes. Okay, the end, right? You yeah. just told us everything, right? So here's the only thing I will say to that is what the research found is many times women feel like their workplaces want them to be one thing mm-hmm. where they really want to be something else, right? And I had this conversation not too long ago with, it was another group, and I was talking about this concept. And what she said to me was she thinks that she started her career feeling like she needed and had to be a blender so that she could finally earn the opportunity to be a splitter.
Yep, 100%.
Wasn't that a good way she said
it? I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. And here's my wondering, I don't know, but what if we could create workplaces where we absolutely held people accountable, right, to whatever their role is, whatever their outcomes were, but what if we could really find which mannerism, the splitter or the blender, they preferred and wanted. And what if we gave it a go to see if that could be okay and effective for all?
This was so important. Hearing this was so important to me because I have such an idea of what work is supposed to look like.
Yeah.
And because we are virtually a startup and have this like very like in office just culture, mm-hmm. I have members on my team who are 100%, you know, kind of blenders where they have to be home for this and they're going to do drop off and they're going to get back in it and then they're going to cook dinner and then they're going to get back in it. Like, that's how they prefer to work.
Yeah.
But that's not what I wanted from that role. Uh-huh. And so it's opened my mind up to being more aware that this is how this person works.
Yeah.
And I, as a manager, have to change what I think of that mm-hmm. because it's not that they're not performing. Mm-hmm. It's that work looks different to them.
Yeah.
And so I've had to change my perspective wow. on that. And I think if people can, that's what's so crucial about learning information like this, because mm-hmm. if everyone can learn it, we can start to shift,
yeah.
you know, what we want from people in the workplace. So.
And what I would say is, and I think that's how we make workplaces work better for all.
That's amazing. Lori Grace, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. I'm so excited about this. I'm going to download the transcript so I can take notes on it. Yes. I want to have you back. We have so much more to talk about.
I would love that. This was wonderful, Kelly. Good to be with you.